I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. Chris Armas's group of attentive young men have vanquished a third Liga MX opponent in Leagues Cup. They now have a date set in Southern California this weekend against Giant Club America. Moise Bombito is most definitely on a plane to France as he's about to be making an official move to OGC Nice in Ligue 1. And the Premier League is back into our loving arms. Oh, and by the way, apparently Mauricio Pochettino is about to accept the job to be the next head coach of the U.S. men's national team. But none of that matters because Darren Yapi has scored another goal. He about to make a name for himself. Joining me now to make sure people know what happened yesterday, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Oh my God, that is, it's a vague Deadpool versus Wolverine reference.
Thank you. I was worried you weren't going to get
it, which I haven't seen yet, but I actually, maybe I can drag my son to see, and that'll be a lot of fun for us.
Dude, Channing Tatum absolutely crushes it as Da Gambit. It's great. It's fantastic. You should go
see it. It's funny because I'm a late 80s comic collector, although a really mild comic collector. One of the things that's funny about, like, being a man of a certain age is, like, we have a lot of nostalgia for, like, comic books and Star Wars and stuff like that. But, like, if you were a middle class family, you don't own a lot of that stuff. You own some. So, like, I'm still waiting for, like, my favorite comic book character who hasn't really been kind of prevalent or evident at all in the Marvel universe is a guy named Havoc. Havoc had a series with Wolverine back in the day that was really, really great that I highly recommend. So, I go with that. How are you been, Matt? Everything good by you?
I'm super busy, Mark. I am drinking from the fire hose. I've been pretty open in some of my writing and some of my tweeting and everything about how I feel about Leagues Cup. I've been pretty honest on this. Mark, are you dangling a spider in front of your camera?
Yeah, a spider showed up in the screen and I was like freaking out. And I'm like, what's going on? And it looked like it was huge on camera. Matt, I tell you, you saw it on camera, right? It looked like a huge spider.
Well, yeah, it was also up close. Like, you know, my nose looks absolutely huge if I put it up here on the camera.
Yeah, so this spider is like tiny. It's like microscopic, but I'm looking at myself in the camera and I'm like, there's a big spider in my face. Where's this big spider in my face? And I saw it on the camera and it was big, and I saw it in real life, and I was like, this thing's tiny. So forced perspective, ladies and gentlemen. Back to you, Matt.
Mark, did you read my Ali Laraz piece from last week?
No, not yet.
Have you read it yet?
No. Is it good?
It's good. You should all go read it over at Burgundy Wave. I'll put a link in the show notes for those of you who have not seen it.
Exciting.
Yet. Ollie's mom has read it, and apparently the Laraz family really, really likes it, Mark. So another opportunity for me to awkwardly brag that the mothers of the Rapids players, the Burgundy boys that we cover, seem to appreciate our content.
I mean, completely. I've had good experiences with the Vines family, with the Laraz family, and with the Bassett family. So they're all really, really nice people. And if you're listening, shout out to the moms and the dads and for doing all the driving. And the Sibs, by the way. Shout out to Cohen Vines. Shout out to Sam Bassett. All guys I've either heard about or talked to about their famous brothers. Don't know much about the Laraz family tree, but I assume that there's some other Larazes down the tree.
There's a sister. I'm not sure if it's older or younger. I don't know if she plays soccer off the top of my head. And then we also have Mark, Alex, Mihailovic, Georgie's dad and recent now grandfather, also has been super active on social media, and he's been enjoying the memes. And if one were to scroll through and see how he's interacted with other people on social media, he seems to be way happier with how Twitter is talking about his son and talking about the Rapids, then maybe he would have been happy at a certain club that's based in Chicago in an absolute dumpster fire, pun intended. But so in any case, Mark, during I mentioned this in the piece, during the interview that I had with Ollie LaRoz, which was actually in the referee's room, which I've only been in a handful of times and never to actually interview a referee on match day. There was a spider that came down from the ceiling and I didn't notice it. And then Ollie like picked it out. And so it was weird. I was like, why? I'm asking him a question. Why is Ollie like suddenly staring at my right ear weird and then reaching towards it? This is an awkward interaction to have
with a player. It's spider week on... on Golding the High Line with Rabbi and Red.
Yes. Okay. Okay. We have a spider infestation in at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in the referee room, and apparently, Mark, you need to get an exterminator out.
No. The Azira basement doesn't get an exterminator. I'm a fan of spiders because spiders keep away all the other bugs that you really don't want.
Ooh,
right.
Good so call.
Yeah, that's my take. Is that like we don't have any mosquitoes or flies or ants in our basement? We keep the spiders here. I only clear them out when my mother-in-law comes to town, and that's that.
Okay. Very good on that. So I guess we'll wait to see, Mark. Which MLS referee would we want to become Spider-Man, Mark? Or are there any of them that we would want? Ishmael Elfath, I think, would be a funny Spider-Man.
I think he's already, like, too bulky. He's more of, like, a DC Universe kind of, like, dude. No, I was going to say my favorite referee is... Villarreal. I forget his first name.
Armando
Villarreal. He already has kind of like a Tom Holland small guy kind of like size to him. So I'm a big fan. He's pound for pound one of my favorite referees.
Mark, let's talk about the news of the week. I mentioned this briefly before we hit the record button. I'm going to assume as an Arsenal fan, maybe you're not as high on this, but Mauricio Pochettino, I think, is higher than maybe I would have expected the USMNT to be able to punch. The brief tease that you had from Jurgen Klopp, I think, was always a pipe dream. But I was looking at a few guys in MLS, a few fringe guys, with European credentials and maybe weak ties to MLS. I would not have liked Steve Trundolo as the head coach of the U.S. men's national team, to be honest. If there's a guy in MLS I thought that the Federation should have gone after, it should have been Wilfred Nancy or nobody else, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, there was the guy who coached at Hoffenheim, who I think is from the U.S., but then grew up culturally in Germany. I wanted Patrick Vieira, mostly because of what he did for NYCFC and his familiarity with the MLS player and the MLS Youth Academy setup. But I think Mauricio Pochettino, a guy who has a lot of really good ideas and a guy who we need to say, looking back on it now with what Tottenham Hotspurs have done, even under Ange Postecoglou, we can say that Poch was liked by his players. He had full accountability and control of the locker room, and he got them to do a lot with not that much in hindsight, looking at where Tottenham was from a spending perspective relative to the other Premier League teams. And I think that's the type of manager from a cultural standpoint and in terms of what they're good at. There are certain coaches who are good at doing a lot with nothing, and there are certain coaches who are capable of doing an incremental amount of good with an incremental amount of talent against more talented opposition. In that regard, I'm okay with it. Mark, your thoughts on Mauricio Pochettino to the USMNT?
Well, okay, so my top three for the USMNT would have been Jesse Marsh, who isn't really available because he went to Canada, Brian Schmetzer, who is theoretically available because he's been with Seattle for a while, but Seattle's having a rough year this year, and I think it's not impossible they'd fire him, but the timing doesn't work out, but it might be a good time to leap. And then my third pick would be theoretically Thomas Tuchel. Tuchel is currently managing Bayern Munich, but I don't feel like that's going to last either. So the idea of like a coach getting out before he's inevitably going to be fired seems like a smart move to me. Tuchel is a little bit of a throwback to the Jurgen Klinsmann days, both in him being German and in him having a reputation for being tough on players, I think, but being tactically brilliant. I mean, Tuchel is kind of held in the same high regard as Jurgen Klopp in terms of like having a vision, having an identity, and playing it. It's not really working for Bayern, but Bayern is a lot older as a team and a little bit like kind of slapdash. There's just a lot of interesting pieces that I don't really understand how they were matched last year. We'll see how they go into this year. But he knows pressure because he's been at all the top clubs. He's been at Chelsea. And then going back to Schmetzer, I think he's really proved himself, and he's proved himself with one team. He's created an identity. They've brought in a lot of players at Seattle Sounders over the years, and he finds ways of fitting them and mixing them and matching them, which means he's tactically flexible based on the players, which I think is a necessity for an international manager, because you can't have any player. You can't go out and buy players as an international manager. You have to get who you have. So if you're wing strong and center mid weak, that means you have to adapt. And if you have, you know, like a lot of height and a lot of physical strength, then you have to adapt. You have to make a team that way. And if you don't like it, that's too bad. Like, you're just, those are your best players. I've talked about my favorites. I haven't talked about the strengths of Mauricio Pochettino. I think being a well-liked man manager is really valuable in creating team identity, but I think having a vision for how your team wants to play and then bringing in the guys that fit that vision is always a really important aspect of being the national team manager. I also think, and this is, you know, we do this as an American soccer national team all the time, which is we ping pong between an American coach who sort of understands what American players, how they're raised, how they play, how they see the game, and then bringing in foreign managers who, to a man, all of them seem to be confused about what American players are, what they're capable of, what their deficiencies tend to be, and they kind of like try to play a system. Historically, foreign-born managers who've played, who've been the USMNT captain, have tried to kind of impose a vision upon the team that I'm not sure has always fit. I don't know. I mean, it's all really difficult, to be honest. I mean, after Greg Berhalter, one of the challenges we've got going forward is the expectations are just really high. You know, you kind of, the U.S. national team, men's national team, is now expected to win like a tournament every 2 to 4 years. Like, that's the expectation. They have to win, you know, Copa, they have to win Gold Cup, or at least be in the final of Copa or Gold Cup. They have to make the semis of the World Cup in 4 years. Like, those are the expectations right now, and they seem impossible. That being said, a 2-year cycle for a coach, I like. I think coaches should be on either 2 or 4 years. I don't think any coach should ever coach a national team for more than one quote unquote full cycle. They should never go beyond 4 years. So I didn't really like that we brought back Greg Berhalter in the first place. I think, you know, kind of like resetting the table, you know, letting some assistant coaches kind of like step in for a couple months and then ultimately coming back to Greg Berhalter. I didn't like that at all. I wasn't a fan of that at all. I think if you're going to step back, you step back. So the fact that they went back to Berhalter and then ultimately went, whoops, you know, after 18 months of him in the job, I'm happy that he's not the coach. Do I think that Pochettino is a solution? Not really. I don't think we're going to win the World Cup. I don't think we're going to win Gold Cup next year. But I do think that he'll create an exciting soccer team. So
I still think, I think Poch is a step in the right direction, Mark. I don't think he's enough, and I still question whether or not we have the top-end talent or talent that can go toe-to-toe with top-end talent when we run into it. So I think making a quarterfinal, winning one game, and then eventually, you know, get out of the group, win that first knockout game, and then get to the final eight, and then at that point you're probably running into a favorite or a dark horse that on paper is better, more talented, and has a better soccer history than the U.S. does. And
I'll just say really quick, I think Weah, Pulisic, McKinney, Musa, if they're all healthy and going into a World Cup, are like as good as it gets. As like they have potential to be world-class players. They have been, for the last cycle, a step below that. None of them have been at that like top level. I really do see when they're on their game. I mean, I watched enough of Juventus and Weston McKennie to think to myself, this guy is as good as anybody who plays the game when he is having a great game, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but can you get four guys clicking at the right time, healthy, rested, you know, motivated, amped up, playing in their best formations, and then you set the pieces around them? It's a big ask, but I think, you know, the right coach can do a lot with those guys. Anyways, sorry to interrupt you.
I agree. And hopefully the S in USMNT will not turn into Spursy, Mark, because we can't have that. So yeah, hooray. The United States men's national team will finally win another knockout game, and then we'll promptly lose to a European favorite or Brazil probably in the quarterfinals in 2026.
Probably.
That doesn't matter, Mark, because of course the women are probably going to win the World Cup because Emma Hayes is back. Emma Hayes is her, listeners, and it's great to see the Colorado girls doing so much great stuff. But Mark, the Premier League is back. Listeners, for those of you who don't know or haven't been listening to us forever, I am Full America. Mark is an Arsenal fan, going back to that book that all of the Arsenal fans read in the 90s and early 2000s, I think. Ouch. Mark?
Or Fever Pitch.
Fever Pitch, thank you. I remember the movie.
It's three things for most of us. For most American Arsenal fans, it's three things. It's Fever Pitch. It's the Invincibles, the run that Arsenal had in 2005, 2006, which most of us were starting to become aware of because you could start to watch English football. And then for three, it's just Thierry Henry. And like watching Thierry Henry, the way Thierry Henry played soccer was just so amazing. And also, you got bonus Patrick Vieira in the same era. I mean, like that is just, and then both of them wind up in MLS. I mean, it's just win, 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 win. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Anyhow, so that's why I'm an Arsenal fan. For Matt, I will say, Matt kind of came of age of the Full America. You know, the Brian McBride, Clint Dempsey, and by the way, I was rooting for Fulham when those guys were on that team too. That was like super fun to have these amazing Americans play for Fulham. So Matt has a really good reason to be a Fulham fan. I have maybe a less good reason to be an Arsenal fan. My son is a Tottenham fan. I don't understand it.
You poor, poor. My brother is a Tottenham fan, actually, Mark. He wanted another London team because he didn't want to go like into like cold weather or something that was hard to get to in order to get to a game or whatever. But he didn't want a team that like wasn't going to lose, that was going to lose a lot or get relegated. So joining me with Fulham wasn't there. And fundamentally, he mostly cares about baseball. He's a Dodgers fan. So he wanted like good analytics, smart spending, fun style of play, but not actually winning anything when it actually mattered. And so I guess this is a roundabout way of saying, Mark, that for the most of our adult lifetimes, the Los Angeles Dodgers have been Tottenham Hotspur. But so in any case, listeners, Mark, we have the, you know, impending juggernaut that is Manchester City that have their court date to see whether or not the Premier League will actually do anything about their $150 billion charges that they have against financial fair play. So there's that battle. Arsenal has retooled a whole lot. Liverpool is maybe in a bit of a transition period as they have my former guy from Feyenoord and De Kuyp, Arne Slot, at the helm as well. Newcastle looking to bounce back from them not making it to Champions League. Chelsea's probably spent another $100 million by the time this podcast has come out because they've got 50 players on their roster and they need 55 players on the roster. Mark, what do we see in the Premier League this season? What are the storylines at hand to you? And I'll start with you, obviously. Is this the year finally that someone, maybe the Gunners, catch Manchester City?
Gee, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, it's really, is Bukayo Saka ready to be the man? That's, I think, the biggest question. And it's really hard to know who's going to have that amazing cometh the man, cometh the hour season. I am so lucky that I got to see an English Premier League team for the first time in my entire life just this summer with Liverpool as they're retooling. And their fans are asking big, big questions about whether they're, you know, ready to challenge for the top four. And the reporters were all kind of asking the question that you just asked, which is, can Liverpool knock off Man City? And the head coach was, of course, cagey, because that's what head coaches do. It's a really good question. I think the questions that are more interesting in soccer, in English Premier League soccer, in terms of like legacy and history, are some of those other teams who there's a lot of pressure to kind of re-enter the big four or the big six. Are they going to be there? So will Manchester United kind of have a rebound? What will become of them? Newcastle fans are fanatical about their team. Can they pierce the top six? Because their fans desperately want them to.
Can we see another team crash the party, Mark? We've seen Brighton and we've seen Aston Villa crash in there.
Leicester City's been up there, you know, but not in many years. Crystal Palace is always kind of like knocking on the door. Like Crystal Palace would love to get out of mid-table, you know, like that. They would die for that. But they'd also love to not get relegated. And so they're kind of like constantly like they're they're always trying to battle against eighth. So
yeah, they're trying to get out of that space as Fulham's trying to establish themselves as for sure mid-table. I think we're pretty much done. There were a few our first year under Marco Silva in the Premier League. Obviously, everybody, it's easy to pick the team that just got promoted to ultimately end up going down. And there were a few last year, just with all the uncertainty around Alexander Mitrovic making his move to Saudi Arabia to start the season. I think that's mostly quelled, even though, you know, it's the second year that we've lost our best player in the summer, João Palhinha, Portuguese midfielder who's gone on to to Germany, to Bayern Munich. But Marco Silva's a genius. We're spending money smartly. Super glad to have Emil Smith Rowe, Mark. We'll take absolutely good care of him, and I look forward to him scoring a smashing header as we get a 1-1 draw when the Gunners come to the Cottage. But you know, I don't know if we don't see something come out of the legal implications there, Mark, in terms of a serious fine that hamper Manchester City financially or an actual points deduction. I still think that Pep Guardiola's biggest competition is not Mikel Arteta. It is not Liverpool. It is not their neighbors in Manchester. It's complacency against their own success that they have of the team. And, you know, obviously they just have, who is it? Julian Alvarez, Mark, who I think they just sold to Atletico Madrid, but there's still a couple weeks left in the window. They're presumably going to be able to spend, but, you know, I think Manchester City will have a bit of a hiccup at some point mid-season, and then in the second half of the year, you know, they'll round into form. They'll win 12 to 15 games in a row. That'll include a 16-17 game unbeaten streak in all competitions, and they'll probably win it. I do think Arsenal's done enough to be on paper competitive with them, something that I think they were a little bit lacking in compared to the previous 2 years. But I think with all of those changes still, it's going to take a little bit of time. And I wonder how much maybe they'll prioritize some of the other competitions. You know, it's about time Arsenal won a trophy under Mikel Arteta, and I think they've got an easier path to that in either the domestic cups or, who knows, Mark, you might actually do something in Champions League since y'all don't have a European final. At least Fulham's made it to a European final. Let's talk the relegation battle that we have, Mark, because we have maybe this year's Luton Town is Ipswich. Formerly Ipswich Town of former Colorado Rapids center back Tommy Smith, I should point out, who've done the double promotion just like Wrexham came up, and they play a fun style of play, but they have one of the lowest squad values in the division. You've got Leicester coming up with a very similar squad to the one that got relegated, which is a nice positive there, but there's some financial fair play implications with them, and Wolves are in there, Mark. I'm not ready to say that Fulham's not in there, and you know, Nottingham Forest, I think, is always going to be in there just with how much squad rotation they've been. Mark, handicap the relegation battle that you have, and which three do you think ultimately go down?
Ipswich is the one that everybody is kind of rooting to go down. I mean, everybody's expecting to go down. Other teams that I think are likely to go down have a good chance. I don't know. I think saying that about Ipswich almost automatically means they'll be rescued. The obvious ones: Leicester City, who just came up, Nottingham Forest, Wolves, who've been up for a couple seasons but have always been kind of down by the bottom. Brighton, Hove Albion, and Brentford, and Bournemouth kind of round out them. The one that I would guess I would root to go down is Bournemouth, because after they had their amazing story with Eddie Howe kind of coming up, they kind of chucked them to the side, and now Eddie Howe's with Newcastle, and so I shoot daggers at them. I have no feeling. Last year, of course, Everton like dodged the drop after a long, difficult season, and Everton, you know, of course, across the river from Liverpool, I think, and very much like the working class side of Liverpool, and really, really want to be, you know, they're really a team that everybody, because of Rog Bennett on Men in Blazers in the United States, we know very well, but like always kind of a perpetually struggling club who don't spend a lot of money, and when they do, it doesn't always work out for them. So that's kind of rounding it all out. But I guess if I was going to pick just three teams, it would be Wolves, it would be Nottingham Forest, and it would be Brighton and Hove.
Oh, I think that's harsh to Brighton, even with the managerial turnover that they had. I'll stick with Ipswich, Mark. I'll put a condition on this. If we see a points deduction of 5 or more on Leicester, I think Leicester will go down as well. And I don't know that we've seen enough of a change from Wolves. And then also Wolves selling Pedro Neto, albeit for a lot of money, to Chelsea, I think will certainly hurt them. I think he was a big part of why they were, you know, able to make that resurgence to mid-table last year. So I'll go.
A point of order, that, and I heard this term a couple weeks ago, and I'm just sharing it with all of you. I think I heard it at the Liverpool press conference that I was at. The term that they use in the English Premier League to technically regarding FIFA fair play finance rules is now called PSR. It's an acronym which stands for Profit and Sustainability Rules. So if you are a big nerd in the English Premier League world and you want to, and you hear them throw out the word PSR, the rabbi taught you something today, folks. It stands for Profit and Sustainability Rules. It's basically the same as financial fair play, which is you cannot make a profit of $100 million in ticket sales and TV revenues and then spend $1 billion on players, right? That's not legal because, you know, the fact that you have a Saudi uncle who's slipping you $900 million in the back door, not allowed, right? At least, not unless you do it in a very creative and clever way.
All right, Mark, that's enough non-Rapids talk. Shall we actually get to this?
So much non-Rapids talk. What's wrong with us?
Listeners, yesterday, Tuesday, Toluca Taco Tuesday, the Colorado Rapids defeated Deportivo Toluca by a score of 2-1 in 90 minutes in the round of 16 of Leagues Cup, thereby the Colorado Rapids advancing to the quarterfinals of this tournament. Mark, a really crazy game, one in which if you look at the balance of the numbers, I think at the end of the night, the Rapids came out better, but certainly the start of the game was not very good from the Burgundy boys. You had Jesus Ricardo Angulo hitting the post in the 7th minute, absolutely fantastic shot from him that stymies Zach Steffen and goes off the crossbar, and then the rebound, Paulinho, the Brazilian striker for them, doesn't get a very good shot off on there. You had a number of really good saves from Zach Steffen as well in that first half, Mark. There was the other one that went off the post as well. Let me see what minute that happened. That was in the 34th minute, and that was João Paulo Dias Fernandez. Mark, I don't... MLS listeners on their box score lists everybody's full name, and so for some of these Hispanic and these Mexican names, you just get way too many names that is not what they're actually known by. And also, Mark, this allows us to know all of the middle names of all of the MLS players, which I think is a little bit awkward. Knowing Kellen Acosta's middle name 4 years ago was a little bit weird. And then Cole Bassett, I think, has an interesting or a non-conventional middle name as well. But in any case, Mark, Toluca's absolutely busted in the game. Rabbi, it's just a matter of when they're ultimately going to end up scoring. I thought the Rapids were a little bit too deferential and defensive, and they were struggling with, they were bending but not breaking defensively. They weren't able to easily transition that into the attack or actually relieving any pressure on their defense. Did not care for Sam Vines' 1v1 defending and passing when he was pressed really. And I think, you know, this is the third straight game in which a Liga MX team has come into Dick's Sporting Goods Park and preferred to attack down the right flank as opposed to the left flank, going at the Rapids left back as opposed to up the middle at their center backs or and their defensive midfielders or on their left against captain Keegan Rosenberry. But in any case, Sam Vines makes up for that all in the first minute of stoppage time in the first half as Cole Bassett hits a great ball to switch the field. Sam Vines cuts inside and then lays the ball on an absolute platter for Rafael Navajo to score Navajo's third goal contribution in 3 straight Leagues Cup games. Hoffa is having a brat summer, and I am absolutely here for it, Mark. And the Rapids are up 1-0 at halftime. I thought the energy was overall balanced in the second half. Rapids had a couple chances. I still thought Toluca was the better team, and that was signaled in the 59th minute when they made a sub to bring on Alexis Vega and then Jesus Gallardo. Mark, I've known, even when I haven't done prep on a Liga MX team, if it sounds like a player who I know that all of my Mexican friends have told me about with El Tri, I'm able to pick up on that. So I was like, wait, is that the Jesus Gallardo that I think it was? Just like I was concerned that León had El Titan for center back for the Mexican national team. So they brought in a couple of subs, Mark, and they were trying to boss the game. And that led to Toluca finally getting a goal in the 83rd minute with a great ball out of the back to Jesus Gallardo, who is determined after a VAR review to be onside. And then he plays the ball to Paulinho, the striker who has his back to goal and a fantastic backheeled flick. Mark, apparently when the Rapids play Toluca, it is Golazos only, as we saw from the scissor kick from last year. And then obviously this goal by Paulinho, and I'll include, not a Golazo. It was a tap in for Navajo. In any case, Mark, the game's going back and forth. I thought Toluca really let up after that. I think they kind of thought they had momentum. They were expecting that the Rapids were in a crumble. I thought they, you know, they had a couple of good chances as well. But I don't think that Toluca wasn't doubling down on going for the winner. And I was kind of expecting, just emotionally, given how good Volpe, the goalkeeper, is for Toluca, that they were reliant on, if they got the penalties, they were going to win because Volpe was a better goalkeeper than Zach Steffen. But little did they know, listeners, that Georgi Mihailovic, bald head and all, had a couple of tricks up his sleeve. Colorado Rapids get an offsides goal in the opening minutes of stoppage time, as Connor Ronan apparently had one leg hair that was offside, as a great ball was switched to him, and then Georgi had a smashing header that bounced off the ground and into the top corner. Mark is shaking his head like he thinks that Ronan was onside. But in any case, that did not matter, because Kamani Stewart-Bain subs in, and he plays Georgi Mihailovic in on goal, and Georgi puts it into a mixer, and Luna, the center back for Toluca, plays them all, trying to defend it, to play it out for a corner. He ends up playing it towards goal, passes goalkeeper. It looks totally set up to be an own goal. And who's there? Not Rafael Navajo, but Darren Yapi, just to ensure that it gets over the line. And the Rapids get out of dodge, and they win the game. Rabbi Mark Goodman, your good things from the Tuesday's win against Toluca.
I mean, just matching up, I think one of the running kind of jokes that these days, with the Rapids, is that they're just death on Mexican teams. Like, they're just knocking them down one after another, which is a far cry from my history with this team, when in CONCACAF Champions League, you go up against a South American, a Central American or a Mexican team, and you're just absolutely schwacked. It's like, there's no, it's not even competitive. These teams are just so much better than we have been in the past. So, beating León, beating Toluca is a big, big deal, and really, really fun, and just kind of really remarkable. So it's everything's coming up Rapids. You know, this team is doing great things. I think that first goal, Cole Bassett starts it off with the long switch. Sam Vines plays it across beautifully. I think that we've got, like, we've had a little bit of, up till the League's Cup, Sam Vines has been not great. He's been shaky defensively, and his passing feels like it's been like a step off of where it should be ideally, especially in the final third with the, you know, critical plays. So the fact that he could play the perfect ball across to Hafa to tap in is just fantastic. And then, you know, kind of like a Goonies never say die attitude with the Rapids at the end, where they looked like they were surging from minute 75 onward, or really minute 84 onward, if you want to kind of ignore, if you want to consider the Paulinho goal, with the run of play for Toluca. The other thing is, I think for the first 45 minutes, Toluca looked stronger in long stretches. And so for the Colorado Rapids to kind of go against the run of play and get their goals anyways was fantastic. Just all of that together, those are our good things for this team.
Mark, I'll highlight some individuals. Zach Steffen with another fantastic game for me. Mark, a bunch of really big saves. And I tweeted this out from Burgundy Wave. Let me look it up again. What he's done against the XG from the last three games against Liga MX opponents is absolutely fantastic, Mark. So the Rapids, listeners, actually had better expected goals against León, and then a better expected goals against Juarez. Toluca had a slightly better one. So the León game was 2.2 for the Rapids, 1.6 for León. That ended up being 1-1. Juarez, it was 4.0 to 3.2. Rapids win that game 3-2. And then last night against Toluca was 2-1 to the Rapids, with the Rapids having 2.1 XG. So right on the money. And then Toluca having 2.6. So Mark, in the last three games against Mexican opposition, at least mid-table Mexican opposition for me, the Rapids have conceded they've conceded 4 goals on 7.4 XG. There's a lot that goes into that, Mark, but obviously Zach Steffen saving more goals from a post-shot XG standpoint than you would have expected by the numbers is certainly part of that. And to compare that to how much we were hammering in on that stat and so many games, Mark, where, you know, but point to me a goal that the Rapids have conceded any one of the four, Mark, in which you could say Steffen should have saved that, or Steffen was at fault, or even Steffen was the first or the second guy at fault. there's really only one complaint that I would have had from him. Saving on the first goal that the first goal that Juarez ended up scoring, where he puts the rebound in a position to where the Juarez striker is able to get to it, is maybe the one thing. But I don't fault him on any of the goals that any of the other three that certainly were conceded, and he's been absolutely fantastic. And so if he gets into a rhythm, the Rapids don't win Leagues Cup, Mark, but that means that once we return to league play on Labor Day weekend, that Zach Steffen is up to the shot stopper who won MLS Goalkeeper of the Year in 2018, who made an all-star game, who got sold to Manchester City for $7 million, then I'm happy with what the progress has been made from the purposes of this tournament. Darren Yapi, Mark, second goal that he scored for the team. Obviously, the one against St. Louis was in garbage time, but for him to get ultimately the winner after the emotional roller coaster that was, you know, thinking that you had scored the winner through Georgi Mihailovic, that one, going to VAR, getting called off and thinking, oh crap, we're going to pens, same situation, kind of a thing. And the emotional swings of that for the Rapids to overcome that as a group collectively and going for another goal to try and win the game. But for Darren Yapi to be Johnny on the spot, do I care that it wasn't an own goal? No, I want you to ensure that that ball gets over the line. And knowing a defender touched it and you were onside, you know that that's an open ball that's not going to get called back if you touch it rather than leave it to get in. Good for Darren Yapi. It's helping his confidence. He's doing a bunch of other stuff that's helping the team from a defensive standpoint as a striker. I'm here for it. I can't be mad at the guy. And then Rafael Navajo, Mark, who continues to do a bunch of really good work against very physical, very crafty Mexican, South American center backs, that he continues to be an effective striker or at least make things easier for the attackers in front of him. Three goal contributions in three games. Any questions or concerns that you had about him after he made that transfer permanent and then I think went seven games without scoring a goal and that was a concern, he's back to clicking and he's doing it with one big chance. He's doing it with a handful of chances. He's doing it by creating and making life easier for other strikers or other attackers. And so I think those are the three standout players that I had. Mark, what bag things stand out for you?
Well, I don't think the Rapids controlled the game. I think there was a lot of kind of like wild swinging, and this game was a little bit vibesy, a little bit like down to passion and down to whether, like, there was a lot of like, this is going to sound weird, but like, cause we won, but like the kind of like narrative that you get towards the end of a soccer game where both teams are like, you know, making bursts of speed and they're like running at each other and it's very physical and it's kind of helter skelter, where, you know, the announcer says something like, it's all down to who wants it more. I hate that. I don't like that. I don't want that. I want a controlled environment where a team methodically takes apart the other team, or one talented player has a moment of skill to put the other guys on their backs and curls it into the upper 90. Like, I want a moment at which you imprint your stamp on the game and say, we were the better team. And we were at altitude, and we were at home, therefore, and we're in our own league, therefore, this should have been ours. And that wasn't really kind of in the offing for me. I also think our center backs, they kind of let us down in the moment where Paulinho scored the goal. It's easy to say like, oh, the center backs let us down, because like that's what center backs do. They concede, you know, goals to strikers. Like they're not going to let them all out. But in the conversation that we have yet to have about Moyes Bombito being sold, I am really concerned that we are not set up for the rest of the season without Moyes Bombito. He is by far our best defender. Not only because he's got great defensive instincts and great physicality, but additionally because his recovery speed is insane, right? Like, he closes like a right back. Like, he closes like an overlapping wing back. Like, he is a fast, fast guy. And we just don't have that at the other positions and at the other players. So those are my major concerns for the downside. Anything from you, Matt, on what's not to like about this game from the Rapids?
I mean, to your point, Mark, this was the third straight game against a Mexican team that with, what, 5-10 minutes to go was virtually a coin flip. Could have gone either way. And so to your point, I feel like León was kind of a game of like chunks of one team doing better than the other. I thought that the Juarez game was open, albeit the Rapids were clearly the better team over the course of the whole 90 minutes. Like, you know, the opening 20 minutes, they were absolutely outplayed. You know, number 10 who put that ball, you know, off the crossbar. He puts that, what, 1-2 inches lower, and then Toluca's up, you know, 1-0 in the 7th minute, 8th minute or whatever. I don't know that the Rapids come back for that. Or I think Toluca then goes, okay, let's go and get a second. And so, you know, credit to the Rapids for finding a way to get results, to getting results in difficult situations and in different ways. But I think by no means have the Rapids been dominant in this regard. And how much, Mark, of the Rapids being here in the quarterfinal, given what we're going to be talking about later on in the show about Club America, is the fact that they've been playing at home and they've won, you know, the Rapids with 10 minutes to go, Mark, have effectively flipped three quarters and all of them have come up heads. And so very easily the Rapids could have lost any one of these games. There's aspects of the performances I've liked. There's aspects of the performances they've improved on. There's clearly still room for improvement. And so I don't think there's any question that maybe other than Mazatlan and maybe not Philadelphia Union, you know, the Rapids are clearly one of the lesser teams left in this quarterfinal. They've done a really great job to play here, but Mark, the draw could have been slightly different and the Rapids could have gone at Seattle and been outplayed and looked bad. And so I go back to, I'm wondering how much of what we've seen, Mark, is maybe a false positive, given that they've been playing at home to a Mexican team that's been living out of a suitcase for the better part of 3 weeks, that's a signal that they could beat good teams or mid-table teams in League MX. My concerns or my curiosities about this team and what they're able to do on the road against quality opposition or better opposition absolutely remain. We're going to get a really good data point on Saturday night at the Diggity in Carson, California, absolutely on that. And I think we need to continue to stay at Mark, you know, regardless of what Sam Vines was able to do scoring in the Derby to beat Real Salt Lake at the end of the MLS period in July. And then obviously getting the assist to, you know, have the Rapids smash and grab and take the lead against the run of play before halftime, that Sam Vines is clearly still a weakness for this team defensively. He's clearly still a weakness for them in possession. And it's not taking these Mexican teams a whole lot of scouting to figure out which side of the field that they should be going after. I think Sam, again, is rolling with the punches. He's growing into games as they happen, and he's finding other ways to contribute. But, you know, this is still, you know, Sam Vine has, you know, gotten into the midfield, and he's cut inside a little bit further upfield than he might have under Robin Fraser when he was the Vines back in 2021. And then he tries to do something creative on the ball, and he turns it over, and that leads to a transition sequence for the opponent. And the Rapids got burned on that in Portland, and they've been lucky to not be burned more by Mexican opposition. And if you do that at LAFC, at LA Galaxy, at Club America, where you're technically the road team to Club America, you know, this weekend, eventually they're going to start getting punished. I wonder how much of this is just something that's in his head, how much of it is a rhythm just thing, just because, you know, his last season at Royal Antwerp completely broke him. He's also getting married or got married. I haven't seen that the significant other, you know, has actually posted a photo of the actual nuptials or the ceremony or anything. Sam Vines has a lot going on in his life, just like how Georgi Mihailović had a lot going on in his life in January, February. There's still a lot to figure out. There's still plenty of time for Sam Vines to figure out. I believe that he is a better player than he's shown right now. He's still kind of a liability, and unless something, Mark, happens in the next 90 minutes at time of recording to bring back Navarro on loan or sign another left back or Jackson Travis to suddenly arrive as the god emperor of left backs, the Rapids are stuck with Sam Vines at the starter, and, you know, he's still going to be a weakness come the business end of the season for me. Mark, big things, anything that you haven't said that you'd like to say about this game against Toluca?
Vibes, baby. I mean, they're winning games late. They're winning them in exciting ways. This was a really exciting finish. I can't imagine what it was like to be there, Matt. It must have been super fun. Such a good experience.
The atmospheres have been great, Mark. It's felt like I don't know if there's a production thing that's particular. Remember, listeners, because the Rapids have been the lower seeded team, they've technically been the road team for all three of these games. And so I don't know if it's a Leagues Cup thing, Mark, or specifically they're doing it from a in-game, in-stadium production standpoint, but there's been more Latin music that's been playing as well. They've got all of the Leagues Cup insignia. You know, you've had good traveling fans from all three of the teams as well. Like, it's been a vibe from an atmosphere standpoint, to, you know, removing the P word and the beer spilling that's been happening, if we're believing people on Reddit and people on Facebook, has happened in some amounts in all three games. But no, it's had a different energy to it than normally a Rapids home game would. And it's made it fun to be there. I think it's made it fun for the players to kind of have that atmosphere and kind of a rivalry component. And that's been enjoyable. Again, the P word and people dumping beers on each other and microaggressions from the Mexican fans notwithstanding.
Yeah, I mean, all of you, do yourselves a favor, and before you watch the Rapids play Club America coming up on Saturday, watch the 7-minute highlight video of Club America versus St. Louis, or any of the other games that Club America have played before this, and just notice what's going on in the stands and how much excitement that these fans bring, and then think that they're not in Mexico City, they're in Los Angeles. And so they brought this crazy traveling circus, and they have all the music and all of the chants and everything, like they brought their traditional supporters group straight from Mexico for all this. But I think a lot of it's probably domestic Club America fans. It's an energy. It's really up there. It's very exciting. So I will say, Matt, I'm sure as a reporter, though, a game that comes down to the final minute is always a difficult one to write. So, you know, as much as you're like, wow, in your head, you're also like, wow, I now have to rewrite my entire opening paragraph and I have no idea what I'm going to say. So I know the feeling. I've been there many times.
Yeah. Normally, Mark, even with full transcribing quotes and social posting and everything, I'm usually, from the moment we're done with post-game media in the North Building and then back up in the press box, I'm pretty solidly, I'm filed and shared on social media usually within 30 minutes. Like, it's taken me 45 minutes to an hour just unpacking everything with all the changes, and I have deleted several paragraphs on all things for these recaps. I much prefer, Mark, the game where the Rapids are up a man and up 3-0 at halftime, to where I can start writing my, you know, my hook and my big takeaways, and I already know who I'm going to ask what and what that quote's probably going to look like. So exciting for the fans, not super exciting, or, you know, certainly not great for the cardiovascular health of the Rapids front office or Chris Armas, and certainly not helpful or convenient for someone who's a print journalist there trying to write a game recap and get it out that night and have people being able to read it, you know, as they scroll Twitter in bed. Last thing that I'll say just about this one, Mark, I'll pull a quote that was really insightful for me from Chris Armas. So, you know, to the point of everything that I had said about this team, regardless of what we feel about the performances and ways in which maybe the Rapids are getting lucky, the fact is all three of these teams that we've seen have come down to big moments, and players, young, old, new, experienced, have shown up in those big moments. And so I just wanted to pull a quote from Chris Armas about how they've gotten about approaching that. I'll start with one from Andreas Maxou, the center back. Quote, everyone is calm, also the coaches. There's no stress. Even when we concede late, we keep going. We also scored one extra goal. He made a joke about the offsides goal, but even when we concede in the first half, we keep going. That's just what we need to do to be a top team. And then he said, and then Chris Armas said, referring to Darren Yappe, he's had a couple big goals this season. Our team responds. We got pushed to the limit in every way. They stick together. They respond in big moments. The high performance teams, what makes them good is the ability to stick together in tough moments. I got to see it close up. I love that the boys found a way on a tough night against a really good team. And so Chris Armas keeps showing, or one of the mantras that he's had during this Leagues Cup is, you find out you're tested and you find out what you're made of. And we find that the Colorado Rapids are apparently made of a lot of really good stuff. Mark, let's move on to the news of the week that we have, as originally reported by Fabrizio Romano, and then as corroborated by Tom Bogert, myself, and then also Braden Nurse from the Denver Post. It is expected in the next couple of days that it'll be official that OGC, what's their full name, Mark?
I don't know what the OG stands for in Nice, but it's Nice. It's in France.
Yes. They are Olympic Gymnast Club de Nice. So apparently they were something for a soccer club, or at some point they were doing gymnastics. Maybe they had a pommel horse guy at some point. But in any case, OGC Nice are a upper third of the table club in Ligue 1. They're normally not as good as a Marseille and certainly not PSG, but you know them, Lyon, who else is in there? I can't even remember. In any case, listeners, Nice's is expected to purchase Moise Mbito from the Colorado Rapids, and the initial upfront price is 7 million euros. If we convert that and nothing bad happens in the economy that changes it, that's around 7.7 million US dollars. And then also there are performance add-ons for the player that could potentially add up to $3 million. So potentially looking at a $10.7 million valuation mark. And then also there is a significant sell-on clause. I've been waiting, Mark, to share this on HTHL. So this is a Holding the High Line exclusive. I haven't said this publicly to anybody else. I have heard separately, listeners, from two people who I trust. The transfer fee is, one person said that it was between 10 and 20 million, and someone else said it was at least 15 million. So let's put that together there, Mark, between 15 and 20 million. That's a pretty good sell-on clause. I think it was 50% for Sam Vines, albeit with the Rapids selling a little bit low on his valuation in order to get into the market. But Mark, if we're going by Nice as maybe a stepping stone for then Moise to become a 15 or a $20 million center back, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility for him by the time he enters his mid to late 20s, then we're looking at a sizable, I don't think, Mark, based on the entirety of the package, I'm happy. I completely understand why Porrick Smith and the Rapids front office accepted this package, given all of the details that we believe that we have on that front. I think the only thing that you could have held out on for something more from Nice later in the month, the French window doesn't close until the 30th of August, listeners, or why you would not sell Moise until this winter or next summer is to get a larger upfront transfer fee. But if you're betting on the player of what he's capable of doing and betting on what he thinks that he can do at Nice, I think eventually the Rapids will be made whole financially via the add-ons and via any potential sell-on clause. And still, it's worth pointing out, listeners, Sam Vines was roughly $2 million. So you're looking at almost a four times more transfer fee, and one that potentially, once we're looking at sell-ons, could be 5-6x of what you got for Sam Vines as well. In that regard, I think the Rapids got good value on Moise Mbito. I think it was right for them to sell when they did and for what the details of the terms were. And Mark, this is good Rapids math. I'll throw it to you, Rabbi, but where I do have complaints or where I do have concerns about this deal is maybe the timing of it in the context of the greater transfer window, hence why we're podcasting at the end of the secondary transfer window for MLS. But Mark, just your initial thoughts on Moise moving and maybe some of the emotions of just the fact that Moise was a fantastic player and we only had him for 18 months.
I think considering he was a draft pick, first-round draft pick, who basically we got essentially for free when we paid him his salary for the year, and he blossomed into this amazing player. I mean, it's just an amazing pick by a scouting department from the Colorado Rapids who, if you're listening, guys, we're really proud of you all. We think you do an amazing job between the metrics and the just evaluation.
Chris Sitterbart, great job finding this kid.
I know, you guys are clicking on all cylinders, and it's. I hope you get, you know, two tickets to Tahiti as like a thank you for this, because you spun straw into gold. I mean, realistically, a first round draft pick is not supposed to turn into a transfer to a European team. I mean, somebody else developed this guy. You guys added a little bit of value, but you gave him a start, but mostly you identified the talent, and that is worth a lot of money. And that's great, but this is kind of a lottery ticket that you really capitalized on, more so than even a homegrown, which is like, you know, a great kid from the local area who you put in the coaching on and you developed. And I think that that's great. And I think the amount of money that they've gotten for him, plus the sell-on money that is rumored to be in there, it's all great. This is a good bit of business. It's probably the right time. It feels a little early for me, but I think, you know, these deals might not come around, and you sell when the market is up and not when, you know, he sustained an ankle injury and missed 4 to 6 weeks, and everyone in Europe has forgotten about him for the winter transfer window, which isn't really the ideal window for a team like Nice anyways. it's a player, you know, who comes from Canada and speaks French, albeit the French-Canadian version. So going to France is a huge, you know, there'll be less adjustment issues for him. There's a lot of really great things about this. Comma. However, my biggest concern from the Colorado Rapids end is, you know, bringing folks in from out of the league, from other countries, costs a lot of money to get them to the Rapids because they're not in LA. They're not going to get into television commercials and Reebok ads and get to hobnob with the who's who and the rich and famous. They won't go out for drinks with Will Ferrell at the end of the game. You know, there's no famous Colorado Rapids fans. So that means that we just got to pay cold hard cash and say you're playing in a real league and it's a really great opportunity, or we have to buy low, sell high again, which means sending people out to South America, scouting really well, sending people out to colleges, scouting really well, and starting all over again. My long point is this, and this is maybe the most important point for me. I feel like this is the death of our MLS Cup chances for the year. Our back line is not as strong without Moyes Bonpito. I don't think anybody in their right mind would say they are. Moyes is the fastest player in Major League Soccer, and he's a center back. His technical ability is fantastic. His ability to knock down balls in the air is fantastic. He is really, really, he's got great instincts in coverage. He's just a great player, and you don't replace it. You just don't. And that means that, I mean, I like Lalas Abubakar. I'm very high on him. I think he's a very solid player. But a very solid player does not replace one of the best center backs in the league. And so we kind of went from a team that had a dark horse outside chance of winning MLS Cup to a team that I don't expect to do any better than, you know, making a nice little short run into the playoffs and calling it a day. That being said, with where we're at right now, there's a non-zero chance that this team does win a cup this season. They win Leagues Cup, and that would be great. It's going to be tough because our next game is against Club America, and we're going to preview it in a second. But that's my take on losing Moyes Bonpito. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the club. I think they got good value for him. I do think that this is kind of catastrophic in the sense that if this had happened 4 months from now, I would have been a lot happier.
I'm trying to find an updated version of Nice's roster to just look at what their center back situation is. According to Transfer Market, which is usually my go-to starter, they only have two proper center backs on the roster, one of whom is named Dante. He's the captain. He's 40 years old. And then there's another center back they have who is 17 years old. But they also have a bunch of central midfielders and D-mids. So maybe something in there positionally between where Nice plays them and then where Transfer Market records them in terms of their roster position is a little bit off. But, you know, I have a hard time. If I just sort, again, Transfer Market, a good ballpark, not necessarily the best for all information. If we're saying 7 million euros, Mark, then, you know, that would put Moyes at, let's see, they've got a few really expensive guys. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's at 10 million, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. There are 14 players, according to Transfer Market, that are worth 8 million euros or more. And it's a couple defensive midfielders, and it's none of the, there's one left back, or excuse me, one right back who is three outside backs total, excuse me, that are worth that much in value. So I think, Mark, if Nice is paying this much money for a guy that we only have, you know, a year and a half of film in terms of what he's done at the first division level, this is somebody who they think can be a regular player for them, certainly at some point this year, if not next season as well. I hope that Moyes is able to get playing time, obviously, he doesn't get into a situation like Cole Bassett or Sam Bynes or others have had, and they kind of have to get bounced around. And I hope that this is a move. I want to believe that Moyes is the type of character to where this is a move that he made because he thought it was the right situation. Everybody said yes to it. He was confident in the opportunity that he thinks he could get with the first team, and it made sense financially for both of the clubs as well. And this isn't the case of him just getting moved because his representation is the same one for pretty much all of the big Canadian stars, and they typically, other than Alphonso Davies, who's moved from Vancouver Whitecaps to Bayern Munich and then Bayern Munich to Real Madrid, like to move them early and often in order to get transfer fees and then also to bump up their value as well. That Moise is moving not just to get to Europe to then create a perception around him, but to then actually play for a club that's in the qualifier rounds for Europa League. So I'm excited about that for him personally. But to your point, Mark, about sad for what this means from a Rapids perspective, I don't think there's any question that taking out Moise Bambito and putting in Lalas Abubakar in a vacuum makes the Rapids a lesser team. And so I can see where it's really disappointing from a Rapids fan standpoint to see LA Galaxy spending money, to see LAFC basically reassembling the French national team other than Mbappe from 2018. And then, yes, it was Andres Gomez got sold for a record fee for RSL, but then they also brought somebody else in. You know, all of the Rapids competition that they're in and around in the table made a big move this summer, spent big this summer. And the only thing the Rapids really did was stand pat in retaining Rafael Navajo, albeit requiring a check of reportedly $3.5 million. And so this, Mark, is similar to, I think, how in retrospect you and I both feel about the teardown after the 2021 season, where there was no move that the Rapids made in a vacuum that I think you could disagree with or that you didn't like, whether it was a contract extension, letting a player go, bringing a player in. There was no one of those that you pointed at and looked at that you didn't really like on the whole. Maybe letting go of Kellen Acosta and the way in which you did it, but you know, they got a pretty big haul from a GAM standpoint for him. Obviously, they made a bunch of money on Marc-Anthony Kaye. And if we want to include it now, Mark, they got him for $1 million. They sold him for 1.5 plus some other assets as well. And they just sold the draft pick that was part of that package as well for $7.7 million. So pretty good haul on that front. But I think when you look at all of those moves collectively, Mark, like the complaints are in the moves they didn't make or stuff that didn't work out in the long term. And so I'm okay with selling your prize center back who might be on paper the most talented center back that you've ever had. The issue is then if you're just relying on Lalas Abubakar to be Lalas Abubakar and then Mike Edwards to back him up, that might be an okay long-term plan. I think Mike Edwards has the potential to be an MLS starter. I still think Nate Jones has potential, obviously, but I don't know that the only center back that you have on for a squad that could be considered a contender for MLS Cup right now in 2024 is Andreas Mexu. And then maybe even then he's at the bottom, you know, that's his ceiling is at the bottom tier of saying this is a center back who could start for a team that could play in and be good in an MLS Cup final. And so that's just the concern that I have. And that's in the context of all the other moves that the Rapids didn't make. So again, in a vacuum, everything they did with Moise specifically in this moment makes sense, even if the timing actually sucks. But it's all the other stuff that happened around them and that they didn't do that makes me upset. And so all of the other teams, Mark, in the West, Vancouver got better. Seattle's figuring things out through Leagues Cup. LA Galaxy is still really good. LAFC is still really good. RSL, you know, we'll see whether or not they got better. Some players in, some players out, but they got a bunch of money. They also spent that money. The Rapids haven't spent that money, Mark. We don't know what's happening to that $7.7 million just yet. We'll see. Once this is official, I definitely want to get and have a conversation with Porrick Smith and see what happens. Mark, let's transition this to the rest of the transfer window. So, Mark, I believe it's midnight tonight Eastern, which would be 10 p.m. Mountain. So we've got what? We've got an hour and 12 minutes left in the transfer window. I'm going to be honest with you, listeners. Normally, I don't reveal everything that I've heard on this podcast. Like, straight up, I've heard nothing, Mark. It's been all quiet on the front range. I spoke with Mitchell Carroll. I spoke with Braden Nurse as well. They haven't heard anything. We haven't reported anything. And the only thing that Tom Bogert has posted about on Twitter in the last hour since we started recording was about Mauricio Pochettino getting the USMNT job. So, Mark, at this point, you know, like I didn't get a name. I didn't get a country in particular that the Rapids were looking at in terms of a position. We heard maybe about a month ago that it was going to be D mid and then winger. And then as soon as the Kevin Cabral injury took place, they switched to winger and then D mid and then possibly a center back if Moise got sold and they felt that that was problematic. We will, in theory, Mark, I think, be getting media availability with Chris Armas on Friday before the Club America game. I think that'd be a good time for me to ask him how he feels about those positions, Mark, in terms of, you know, there's a platoon situation at left back with Jonathan Lewis and Kamani Stewart-Baines that has some qualms about that I spoke about last pod. Obviously, they like what they have with the various three players in the double pivot, even though none of them are a true D-mid. And then clearly the coaching staff is comfortable with what Lawless has done this summer when Moise hasn't been available. And they think that there's potential in Mike Edwards. But so where I'm frustrated with this window, Mark, is that the Rapids didn't bring anybody in where everyone else around them in MLS did. And that was knowing that, what, 2 months ago, Mark, we knew that Lamine Diok wasn't going to be retained. So you knew that there was a position open at the D-mid position. And you've known about Kevin Cabral's injury was, what, a month ago this week? I'll say at least 3 weeks as well. Like, you've had plenty of time to deal with this and you haven't done anything. And that's with an open U22 slot. That's with, from what you've reported, as an open international roster slot. And if nothing else, Mark, if nothing else, where's the $300K to Austin for Ethan Finley? Or where's the, you know, $500K and maybe a draft pick for Fafa Pico? I can't remember the winger that you shouted out the last time we had that conversation. Mark, where is your concern meter, regardless of selling Moise Bombito, on the fact that the Rapids did not bring anyone in and did not address potential concerns at the six and at the winger position?
I guess out of a 5 stars of concern, I'm at a 2. I sort of buy the narrative that this team is successful. Don't broke what's fixed, or don't if it ain't broke, don't fix something. There's a expression. And I kind of respect that. It's a thing that, having followed this team for 10 years now, there's like this boomerang effect where if the team has a good year, the next year they don't make a lot of changes to their roster. And usually that year they don't do very well because they didn't make enough changes to their roster. So the next year they make a lot of changes. And that year they're not very good because they made too many changes to the roster. And the year after that, they're good. So that's like my experience with this team, is that not making changes ultimately doesn't pay off. But there's a risk of like tinkering with something that works and messing with it. So I get it. It makes sense to me. I do think that they have like three positions that you mentioned perfectly to address in the off season, in the winter. They're going to have to see how far they can get with what they've got. I'm rooting for them to win Leagues Cup because that would be a huge accomplishment. It's unlikely, but that's, I think, where the upward trajectory top end of this team is.
Let's talk about the financial implications of this as well, Mark. First of all, listeners, Rabbi, do you remember, is there a FIFA rule about the percentage of the transfer fee that the player gets as like a bonus?
There is. It's about, I think it's 5%. So that is one of the reasons why players push for transfer fee moves as opposed to free agent moves. In a free agent move, you can get more money from a team because they're not paying a transfer fee. So that goes straight to you as your salary. In a transfer fee move, you can get that money. Like, it's just, they cut you a check and it's a pretty great deal. I think it's 5%.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a pretty good deal. That's a lot of money for a young kid.
So yeah. So again, to speak about the financial component of this, Mark, not just for everyone, but also the player as well. And where
I mean, that's that's $350,000. Yeah. Like, that's more money than I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't know about you, Matt.
Yeah, and Mark, that is almost double of what Moise has been paid in combined salary during his time with the Colorado Rapids. Because remember, he's still on the second year of his GA deal. So I think it was 90K and change last year, and I think it was 97K this year. Obviously, he's been transferred midway through the season. So let's say comfortably, Mark, under $200,000 that Moise has been paid for 18 months as a member of the Colorado Rapids. Listeners, there is a very good possibility that the single biggest check, or that there's a chance that already, if this deal's done, or when that bonus check for the transfer fee clears in Moise Bombito's bank account, that Nice will have already paid him more than the Colorado Rapids paid during his entire time as a Rapids player, which speaks to how much great value.
I'll just add, his agent will take 10 to 30%, and his manager will take 10 to 20%. And if he has a lawyer working on the deal, independent of those two, that guy's going to take 10% too. So when I said Moise is going to, and by the way, I looked it up, it is 5%. When I said Moise is going to get 350, what I meant by 350 was at best 250. But anyways.
Okay, still, okay. If it's
a lot of money. Still a lot of money.
Yes. Still, in any case, Mark, there's legitimate
math. Take me out for lunch. I only eat grilled cheese and French fries. I'm a cheap date. You'll have to buy a high-end IPA, but, you know, you can afford it because you have $350,000.
Yeah, so from a Bombay math standpoint here, Mark, in any case, there is a very real possibility that once this clears, Nice will have already paid him as much or slightly more than the Colorado Rapids ever paid him. So again, great value for what the Rapids were able to find in the draft. Great value in terms of how much they developed Moise over his time with the Rapids relative to how much they were paying him. Ultimately, this speaks to there are still gems in the draft and you can get them, albeit it's not very often. It has to be the right situation and the right timing. And the player maybe needs to be a unicorn as well. But it also speaks, Mark, to the fact that Moise Bombito was undervalued. Moise Bombito's potential as a player is above being a top center back on a Colorado Rapids team that is still in, you know, bottom 10 in net spend in Major League Soccer. And his salary is certainly worth way more than $97,000. You know, it's a joke that you made this time last year, Mark, where we were talking about Rapids player salaries. And you mentioned that Anthony Markanich was making the least amount of money on the team. He was on the, I think, the rookie minimum of $60,000. And that's rough, Mark, even if with your rooming with a teammate based on Denver rent prices. Moise Bombito will have no problem being able to afford a second bedroom in, you know, the nice part of Nice for his mom to come stay with him when she wants to come see him play and play in France and avoid, you know, and get some very nice, very healthy French food as well. Let's talk about the greater kind of financial implications of this, Mark. I have to believe, based on just everything that I know about Porrick Smith and what he likes to do within the league, Mark, that the Rapids will probably max out or get close to the amount of GAM they can with the transfer fee. So the transfer fee comes in, listeners, and it technically is an exchange between MLS and the buying club. So this is so the Rapids are negotiating, but functionally, because single entity, that is still happening. And the clubs have various options for what they want to do with that money that they receive or what that money ends up looking like. And one thing that is available to teams for any sale that you have, I don't think this includes DPs, Mark, but it definitely applies to homegrowns, and it has to apply to Generation Adidas players, which Moise is that there's a portion of that you can convert directly into general allocation money. I think this year the max is like 1.3, 1.4. It's $1.5 million dollars in GAM at the absolute most. So I have to believe, Mark, the Rapids are going to get at least some of that, possibly a maximum amount. And for a transfer fee in the secondary window, listeners, you can make that GAM for next year. So I have to believe that the Rapids could take the max out payout on GAM for that and make that entirely 2025 general allocation money. This isn't money that, you know, the Rapids have no time to spend in this case. And the rest of that, Mark, gets distributed to the club as cash. And both the current MLS roster rules and regulations and the past ones in recent years have been really ambiguous as to what you can do with that. There were prior iterations of it, say maybe 5-6 years ago, if I'm remembering correctly, where that money had to be specifically earmarked for other stuff. So you could spend it on a transfer fee if it was a DP, or I think it was or if it was a TAM player, that was something that I think was available. And then you could spend it on infrastructure. So like you could put it into the academy, you could upgrade the stadium, do something like that. Those earmarks, if you will, don't appear. The earmark language of that no longer exists in the roster rules and regulations. So that is distributed as cash. So I'm not prepared to say this, Mark. I don't have any evidence of that. I can completely understand where a Rapids fan looks at that and think, oh, the Rapids spent between $3 and $4 million for Georgi Mihailovic. They spent $3.5 million for Rafael Navajo. So somewhere between 7.5 and 8, that's really close to 7.67 million that they're just getting now from Moise Bombito. How do we know that KSC isn't looking at that and saying, okay, this is paying us back for the DP money that we gave, knowing now that the team's better and the fans are happy and that they're not walking out and we're getting sales and we're at least somewhat competitive and relevant in Major League Soccer? I'm not prepared to say that, Mark. I haven't spoken to anyone at the club or the league that says that is how KSC is handling it, obviously. I have to assume once this deal is official, there will be immediate availability with Porrick Smith. I am waiting to get an answer. I would be waiting to get an answer from him before thinking about that. I can completely understand the long-suffering Rapids fan who has absolutely no faith in KSC, in Josh and Stan Kroenke, who are skeptical that that's not something that's a possibility. And Mark, I would be prepared to investigate that a little bit more if we get to the January transfer window and the Rapids aren't filling that U22 slot or bringing in a winger or a D-mid or somebody where there's a transfer fee or a valuation placed on them. You know, if the Rapids are only making interleague moves and signing a homegrown and doing stuff in the draft as well, they don't bring anybody from abroad or there's no player brought in from a transfer fee, I'm going to start to get curious. I'm going to start to ask questions. And I think we're going to start to wonder where whatever portion of that $7.7 million that didn't get go to fees or go to the league or go to Moise or his representation, where that money ends up going. Mark, how concerned are we that that's potentially what's happening and not this money being rolled forward into what Porik Smith's going to do in January to make this team even better come 2025?
Yeah, I think I understand that KSC wants to turn a profit with this team and they probably only break even from year to year in terms of running the team with profit through the turnstiles and through the television. But I think at the end of the day, so I've said this before on many podcasts, I will say it again. I think KSC is in it for the appreciation of the franchise value, right? That the fact that they bought the Colorado Rapids for, I think, something like $17 million when they originally came up back in 2007, and the team appreciated quickly, or might have been higher, might have been like $38 million or even $68 million. But the team is now, because of expansion fees in MLS, going to over $400 million. Plus, you get Dick's Sporting Goods Park and all of the land that it's on. You'd be hard pressed to argue the Rapids are worth less than $400 million at this point, which means, you know, the team has appreciated, you know, hand over fist, you know, by many multiples. It's appreciating at probably, I think I did the math many years ago for an article, it was appreciating at like 16% per year, which I'm in the stock market, Matt. On a good year, I make 11%. It's fantastic. It's great money. It ain't 26%, right? It ain't 16%. So that's where the real money's at it. I think that means that ultimately, that KSC has probably given Porik the leash, the ability, the allowance to go out and spend all $7 million of this team, because ultimately it increases the kind of overall value of the team. You also get these little kind of like knock-on effects that are a rising tide raises all boats kind of effect, which is like, if you go out and spend the money on Tim Howard, then you get Transamerica as your front of jersey sponsor. So like, it all kind of adds up in the end if you spend it right. And Porik Smith and Fran Taylor's history is they spend it right. You know, they make good moves. So I wouldn't mind if KSC took a little bit of money and pocketed it on this for a rainy day. But I don't think when you're looking at an owner that owns six major franchises worth over $1 billion, well over $1 billion, probably well over $3 or $4 billion at this point, that like nicking $1 million here off of the Moise Bombito trade is something that they really think about.
Yeah, but from a from a budgetary standpoint, Mark, I think the Rapids would be really upset if like some of that money went into like renovating the can downtown, or if it went into the transfer budget of Arsenal to say, I don't know what that would mean from a PSR standpoint.
I don't think that's exactly how it works, but I don't think it doesn't happen that way, in the sense that like the money's all technically kind of pooled in one, in some world the money is all crunky money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right that I don't think that's technically how it plays out. I wouldn't necessarily mind if they plowed $2 million of that into stadium renovations, but I don't think they don't say they do that. They talk about the overall they just write, you know, I do budgets too. You just say the overall profit of the team is X amount of dollars, and you say, look, we made $2 million in profit from gate sales, and you just take that gate sales money and you apply it to the new stand you're going to build on the north side. And you take the $2 million you got, the $7 million you got in profit from Moise Bombito, and you say, we're applying that to player salaries because that's what the player salaries cost. Anyways, this has been another lesson in how to run a creative budget from Rabbi and Red.
I look forward to Mark, you know, doing some proper accounting or documenting of what the club does in fiscal and calendar year 2025 to see where that money's gone, or if there is there an obvious way in which we can see that that money's spent. Mark, how much I'd be okay with $1.5 million being spent if Moise Bonbito pays for us to replace that stupid scoreboard with all of the broken pixels. I think there'd be at least some Rapids fans who could get on board with that. Any case,
Moise Bonbito Memorial Scoreboard. Yeah, I'd be a fan of it.
Mark, I've got some, we've got a plan for if this is official, listeners, for what we're going to do to kind of memorialize Moise. And I've got an idea for an episode that could come out, you know, this weekend or next week for what that would look like. But, you know, Mark, I think it's worth pointing out, you know, Moise grew up in Montreal and he didn't get scouted by then the Impact, now CF Montreal. And he ended up at community college in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, at Western Iowa, Reavers Soccer. Shout out to Mike Brown. And then he went to New Hampshire, which is not a blue blood in college soccer. And then he worked his way into being a GA player. And he was a rookie and a young player on a team that had a lot of center backs and a center back as a head coach. And it took him a while to get into the lineup. Maybe Robin Fraser could have done a better job there. And he had a couple really tough games. You know, he got second yellow against San Jose. That was absolutely bogus for me. He got absolutely smoked in stoppage time in this fixture against Toluca last year to see the Rapids get grouped. And he had a lot of rough moments, and he proved to be a good, young, fun player, an admirable young man who is, you know, an old head on young shoulders, with how he is handled progressing in with the Canadiens national team and getting opportunities under Jesse Marsh, who has really close connections with Chris Armas. He's handled the popularity and what he's done against Messi really well. He handled, you know, becoming the fastest player in MLS from those two sprints that he had, one in Club America, one in Leagues Cup, one obviously against Inter Miami earlier this year. And he handled, you know, with absolute grace, the racist abuse that he received for that hard tackle on Messi from Argentina fans on his social media. And he's a fun kid who's maybe a bit of a mama's boy, but he had a great moment scoring on his birthday in a win against LAFC, and he's stood up big in big games, and he's been great defensively. He's been great in possession, and you still see just fundamentally he's a young kid who played a bunch of different positions on soccer, who's just going out there having fun, enjoying his football, and being a good person with everyone that he interacts with. And so I think that's worth pointing out there. And you know, I saw a young, humble, excited kid that I heard over the phone. I heard it in his voice, Mark, his character, when I spoke to him the day after the Super Draft. I was the first member of the media to interview him. And so I think there's a lot of little moments of Moise Bonbito that are absolutely worth celebrating. Him getting dragged over by Kevin Cabral to the side of the stands where his mom was up in one of the suites, and then Moise couldn't end up finding where his mom was. Kevin Cabral found him, pointed him out. They were seeing that his mom was dancing, and so they started dancing as well. And so it's just Moise Bonbito is hoped for, is what I'm saying. And I'm going to miss him, but at the same time, Mark, are we HTHL official position? Are we Nice fans? Is that how this works now? Mark, give me...
I don't think we have a choice.
Okay. Mark, give me what's a moment for Moise that is going to stand out for you?
Oh, this is not my strength. I think any of the most memorable thing that we'll ever see about Moise are all of the plays that were gift and memed and reeled on TikTok and Insta of him chasing down a defender, chasing down an attacker from behind and stealing the ball off him. Those will be the most memorable ones. But I think, you know, kind of like his debut, just a lot of like little moments like that. That big smile, his call up, the kind of clips of him getting called up and being told that he was playing for the Canadian national team. His play for the Canadian national team in general, just those. That's something that we'll always have as Rapids fans. We'll be like, oh, he's one of ours. Matt, do you have any?
Maybe another one, Mark, that's not mine, but that Cole Bassett has recalled. They had like the week before their official report date. A bunch of guys were already in Colorado and wanted to get together for a pickup game. And so this would have been last year, listeners. So this is the first time Moise was meeting a bunch of his teammates. It was the first time that Cole Bassett had seen him. And he's coming in, Mark, and he's doing techers. He's doing stepovers as a center back. And Cole just being like, who is this kid? Like, how is there a center back out of Montreal known for defense, but also stubbornness, but not necessarily, you know, skill points and, you know, working the working the R joystick on the FIFA controller. Like, where does this come from? And so I think that's emblematic of who he is as a player. There's so many little bits of his upbringing that I think produced the young center back that we've seen today. That's going to continue to do him good stead, playing in France and playing for the Canadian men's national team. All right, Mark, let's get to it. Listeners, this coming Saturday, August, don't have the calendar in front of me, August 17th, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on one of the Gigantes, Club America, the big club that plays in the Azteca in Liga MX, the defending Clausura champions, Mark. The Colorado Rapids will be playing them at their hub at the Diggity in Carson, California. And Mark, no question, this is the best Mexican team left in this competition. And this is the toughest opponent that the Rapids will be playing the rest of the way in Leagues Cup. Pointing out some key players that they have, Mark, a former LA Galaxy and Barcelona Academy product, Jonathan Dos Santos, who the Rapids have played before when he was here with LA Galaxy. Their main new acquisition from this past summer was coming over from Pachuca, Eric Sanchez, a central midfielder. And they also have center back Sebastian Cáceres, who I believe is capped with the Uruguayan national team. Don't fact check me on that, Mark. But they don't have a key, I think, striker, Mark, that really stands out in terms of kind of being their main star player. Henry Martin is their captain playing up top, but he's 31 years old and maybe certainly on a bit of a decline. Their strength is their midfield and in some of their wide players. Mark, America has had some tough moments in this. They were down 2-1 come the 55th minute when St. Louis got a PK the other day, and then they scored in the 79th and then in the 8th minute of stoppage time to ultimately win that game 4-2. Excuse me. They had goals in the 86th, the 79th, and then 90 plus 8. So it was the 85th minute, and St. Louis was up 2-1. So they've had a couple scares, Mark, but this is a team that isn't traveling a whole lot. They've played games at Snapdragon Stadium in San Diego. I presume that they'll be at Dignity Health Sports Park for the duration of their tenure at the competition. I haven't gotten, Mark, a good answer as to why that is, like why their hub changed. Maybe they wanted to, and maybe with LA Galaxy no longer playing, they didn't have conflicting home games or something. But, Mark, I'm expecting it to be like 99.9% Club America fans on Saturday, and this is still a really good team, and this is a team that if the Rapids make the mistakes they've made against the three other Mexican teams, Club America is in a better position to punish them than any of the other three. Mark, the Rapids are losing this game 3-0, yeah?
Yeah, let me give you my preview. So I I previewed this team. I watched their game against St. Louis because I wanted to kind of see them play. A couple other players that you might want to think about. Right wing, Jaivaro. Might be Jaivaro. De La Russen is a Dutch-born player who is on loan from Feyenoord. So that's interesting. He may have kind of suited up next to Cole Bassett, at least briefly when Bassett was with Feyenoord. He sustained an injury in the 32nd minute, was subbed off, but I don't think it was serious, and he's listed as ready to go. So that's interesting. Brian Rodriguez, who played 4 years for LAFC, is on this team. He scored a brace in the match against St. Louis. Diego Valdez is their Chilean number 10. He's very talented. He plays a lot like Diego Rubio, another Chilean that we know very well, kind of like as a false nine-ish kind of player. But he has a really beautiful touch. He's very, don't play to me, play through me. He just wants to affect the game with the minimalist of kind of touches, deflections into traffic, and so on. Center back Nestor Araujo played in the 2022 World Cup for Mexico at center back. So he was kind of like, and he's a 30-year-old player. He's a longtime center back for the team. He's their starting center back. But he was not on the roster for 2024 Copa America. He only played in 3 friendlies in 2023. So he's one of this kind of like, he was on the radar for the Mexican national team, and then he wasn't. So it's interesting to kind of see that. You mentioned Jonathan Dos Santos on the broadcast. They called him Liga MX ruled him last season to be the best defensive midfielder in the entire league, which is remarkable considering he had a really good run in MLS when he was with the Galaxy. But I think he kind of went down to Mexico with the idea being like, all right, you know, the wheels have come off the bus. He's no longer valuable anymore. And actually, there's still some tread on that tire, and he's still a really talented player. St. Louis, here's a couple tactical notes. St. Louis didn't really press Club America for the first 25 minutes, and Club America just ran all over them. And then they started pressing at about minute 30, 35, and Club America looked shocked and unprepared, and that's actually how St. Louis got their first goal. A mistake in the press turning into a goal. Sounds familiar, right, Matt? We had one of those against the Colorado Rapids had one against Juarez that way. A press turned into a goal. So
yes,
they play a very fluid 4-2-3-1. It lines up like a 4-2-3-1. It's almost a total football 4-2-3-1 where guys are overlapping. The defensive midfielders are float high. They never play with two defensive midfielders in a low pivot, so kind of like it says it's a 4-2-3-1, but if you look at it, it's going to look more like a 4-1-4-1. And then in defense, it's going to look like a flat 4-4-2 most of the time. So it's interesting. They're very fluid. They're a manager who's out of the Brazilian league. It's in his first year. He clearly has them playing vibe football. You know, guys, go out there, run real hard. You know, connect with each other. You know, don't worry. Positions are just suggestions, like do your thing. So there's a little bit of like kind of like chaos theory involved in the way they play their football. They're very good at it. They know how to adjust off of each other, but positions are merely suggestions for this team. Anything else that I wanted to say? You may want to take a look at the highlights just to see the fourth goal, just because it's a rare kind of goal. It was a last minute 90+7 corner kick that St. Louis had down 3-2. They needed it to tie the game. They brought up goalkeeper Roman Berkey to come in and play in the box. Club America retained the ball. The goalkeeper booted it long to one striker who was running onto it. He juked through two defenders and scored a final goal. But it was nearly like a goalkeeper. There was a moment where I was like, is the goalkeeper going to score on an empty net? That's going to be rad, but it's not exactly how it happened. So overall, it was really good. The other last thing I want to say as my kind of concluding notes here is Club America came out completely flat out of the half. Absolutely not ready to play at all. They were up 1-0. They were controlling the first half. They looked like a dominant team. It kind of felt like an open and shut game. This looked like it was going to be 3-0. Then they coughed up two goals. One that was just a really boneheaded defensive pressing mistake. And a second one, which was on a really dumb foul that turned into a penalty kick. And all of a sudden, St. Louis is up 2-1. St. Louis was a weaker team. They only controlled this game for like 15 or 20 minutes total in the whole time, and they still made a game of it. So interesting question as to whether Club America doesn't think they're better than they are. They definitely have a lot of talent on that field, and they're really, really brilliant. But whether they are cohesive enough and have a plan is a really good question. So I'm going to say they win this game. They win 3-1. But there are actually, you know, stretches of this game where I would guess that the Rapids are actually in this game for at least 60 minutes before Club America puts the pedal to the metal and blows them out the back. That being said, I think there's a world where the Rapids win this game. I do think there's a world where the Rapids win this game because Club America live fast, die young, want to leave a good looking corpse and move on. Like, they're very kind of like exciting, upbeat. I think the one like X factor that you mentioned is the Diggity is so loud with their supporters. I mean, they filled the Diggity with their people, and they sing the whole time and they're raucous, and it's a show. So the fact that the Rapids didn't get this one as a home game is, it kind of hurts them.
Let me look up Mark really quickly. I know it's been inconsistent on MLS Press Box as to whether or not they've been reporting attendance. I'm just curious to see, you know, for a Tuesday night game.
I've seen like no attendance reported for any of these games. I mean,
we've been getting them for the Rapids, Mark. So there were slightly more people.
They're not being published online very well, because I remember the Rapids didn't publish their own press releases. They didn't publish their own.
But we got it, and I believe it out, Mark. Yeah. So nice it was 10 something on the Friday. It was 11 something last night on Tuesday. So slightly better numbers, which given, you know what, 3 days notice in a game on a Tuesday, I think was certainly good. And I think it was 13 something, 14 something against Club Leon, but that was a group stage game that we've had on the calendar for a month. So according to MLS Pressbox, Mark, the attendance for Club America was 11,553 people, which is, you know, that is, you know, that's midweek Carson, middle of the road season by Galaxy standards. So we'll see if that number's better. I have to imagine with it being a Saturday, it's going to be better. Do we know? I think it's an 8 o'clock kick, Mark. Do we have a schedule for that yet? Let me see. It's 8 p.m. Mountain Time, so 7 p.m. Pacific. So yeah, there's that. But Mark, I'll agree with you. I'll go with 3-1 Club America in this one as well. And I will say that it's a garbage time goal. So I'll say after the 85th minute. So 70th minute, 80th minute. This will be a 2-1 game that the Rapids have a chance in. But to your point, Mark, I'd love to be the Rapids, be competitive from a performance standpoint. Like, don't get absolutely shacked. Like, show that what you've done in this League Cup is an indication that you can go on the road in a hostile environment, out of your comfort zone, out of altitude, against a team that's better than you on paper, and you don't get completely blown out like you did against LAFC. It's not the FC Cincinnati game where I text you, Mark, in the 15th minute saying FC Cincinnati is the way better team. It's just a matter of when they get the first goal, the Rapids are going to lose this game. Like, I don't want to feel come the 20th minute that the game's already over, that Club America already has 2 goals and the Rapids are completely out of it. I would like to see that the Rapids have transcended that, something that we've noticed in pockets against the very good teams that they've played. Prove to me, Mark, let me see a performance that would give me confidence that the Rapids are going on the road for a third leg against LAFC, that the Rapids have a chance of getting a result in that one. Show me a performance and show me a final score line that is indicative of that, and then I will start to feel different about this team's ceiling come the business end of the MLS Cup playoffs. Anything else, Rabbi, or shall we get out of here?
Got nothing else. Thanks for supporting the show, and don't forget to subscribe and like us on Facebook and Twitter. Matt, back to you.
I don't know what it's been, listeners, but the last couple of weeks, I'll say even going back to the Rocky Mountain Cup game, is that the engagement that I have seen on social media when I posted stuff about the Rapids, and this is on all of my channels, so this is my personal account, Burgundy Wave, HTHL's account, have been absolutely good and way better on a per-view basis now that we have that information. So I don't know if that's you doing something. I don't know if that is because the team's doing well, so you're more enthused about it. I don't know if more fans are finding us post Megapod. I don't know if this is something that Elon and his, you know, his drones are doing from an algorithm standpoint, but whatever's happening, like, keep it up. It is so rewarding to see our amount of hard work get noticed, get interacted with fans, and the fact that this Rapids community is coming together with what this team has done and the magic and the joy that they've brought to all of you. It makes it way more rewarding for us to do that. On that note, listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96podcast. Email us in long form at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Tell Moise Bombito about us, because he's going to have to start listening to us now that he's no longer with the team, and he needs to catch up with the team given that the time zone isn't going to be conducive to him watching Rapids games live. And support us on our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you'll find Mark's written work and also where you can become a Highliner. $48 for the year or $5 a month. And we still got a bunch of leftover swag as well if there's t-shirts with, you know, inside jokes from 3-4 seasons ago that you are interested in. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to Holding the Highline. And we'll see you next week to see what's going on with League Cup and whatever else happens from a Rapid standpoint.
Peace.